Our monthly spiritual theme is wholeness, and we're going to be addressing that in several ways in the weeks to come. And my sermon today is largely based on the work of Parker Palmer, writer, lecturer, teacher, activist, especially from this book of his, A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Towards an Undivided Life. Now, with every one of Parker Palmer's books, there's enough for 50 sermons and at least 10 book groups that would last a year. So today I'm just going to focus on a couple things. What is it that makes us fragmented today, makes us broken? What is necessary for wholeness? And what do we need to get there? Palmer tells us of his annual trips to the Boundary Waters Wilderness area in northern Minnesota. And what began as a vacation for him, an annual vacation many years ago, he knows now is a spiritual pilgrimage. The Boundary Waters is hundreds, maybe even thousands of square miles of lakes, rivers, and deep forest on the Canadian border. And when he's there, Palmer says he feels the wholeness hidden in all things. Their nature shows him the integrity that is eternal and beyond all doubt. He says he returns to the human world each year with new eyes for the wholeness hidden in me and my kind, and a new heart for loving even our imperfections. And so he says that the wilderness constantly reminds him, wholeness is not about perfection. Wholeness is not about perfection. Because as humans, we can't do that, right? In 1999, a 20-minute blast of hurricane-force winds took down 20 million trees in the Boundary Waters. And when Parker Palmer went up north a month later, he was heartbroken by the ruin that he saw. He wasn't even sure that he wanted to come back again. But he did, and he says that every year he is astonished at how nature uses devastation to stimulate new growth, slowly but persistently healing her own wounds. Seeing this gives him assurance that wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing our brokenness as a part of life. And that brings hope for Palmer that human wholeness, mine and yours and ours, doesn't have to be an unreal dream as long as we can always use our fragmentation and ruin as a seedbed for our new life. Now, I want to be super clear that devastation and fragmentation don't come to us so that we will be stimulated to new life. They just happen. Things happen. But if we can learn from our suffering, if we can learn something from it to generate new ways of being in us and around us, that is a good thing. So what shape does a divided life, our fragmentation, take? Palmer gives some examples. A fragmented life is the life we lead when we remain in relationships that steadily kill off our spirits. We make our living at jobs that violate our basic values, even when our survival does not absolutely demand that we stay in them. We lead fragmented lives when we harbor secrets to achieve personal gain at the expense of others. When we hide our beliefs from those who disagree with us to avoid conflict and challenge and change. And probably above all, we lead fragmented lives when we conceal our true identities for fear of being criticized, shunned, or attacked. all of these ways of living fragment us. And we start our secret hidden lives all too young. Usually by the time we're in our teens, we have developed our young version of this divided life, going back and forth between our outer and acceptable roles to our secret world of self. Even more sadly, as we come into adulthood, and sometimes much too, much, much younger, we can't enter that secret world of our inner soul anymore, even in private, and we suffer for that. We sense that something is missing in our lives, and we search outside for it. We feel like fakes because we're not in the world as our true selves. And what if someone sees us as fakes? Relationships are hard because we lack the authenticity to be in them wholly. And we project what we dislike about ourselves onto other people and then blame and despise them for their fragmentation. So what can we do about this mess of brokenness we all can find ourselves in? When it feels too scary to be our real selves, what if everyone else finds out? Palmer has a lot to say about that, most of his book, but I'm only going to focus specifically on one aspect. He writes, "We cannot embrace that challenge of becoming whole alone, or at least not for long. We need trustworthy relationships, tenacious communities of support, if we are to sustain the journey towards an undivided life. That journey has solitary passages, to be sure, and yet it is simply too hard to travel without the assistance of others. And because we have a vast capacity for self-delusion, we will inevitably get lost along the way without correctives from outside ourselves." Parker names these kinds of communities, ones that support our wholeness, as communities of trust. We need these communities of trust because they bring to us and expect of us accountability, courage, support, and insight. Parker experienced this kind of community first when he lived in some intentional Quaker communities. Quakers run a small group version of a community of trust. They are called clearness committees, and maybe some of you have heard of them in the Quaker tradition. And this is when a person who is struggling with something sits in a circle with folks who are trustworthy and committed to that person's wholeness. They aren't there to fix the person or give advice. That would be amateur psychotherapy. They are not there to offer false politics or values. All that committee members can offer to the person who is the focus of the committee are questions. That's all they get to do. That's all they get to say. And not advice or diagnoses disguised as questions. We all know what those questions are like. Have you ever thought it might be your mother that is at the core of all of your problems? The pace of a clearless committee is slow and gentle. The time is limited to 2 hours. The agenda is clear, with time for reflection on the part of the focus person. Now, those questions can definitely be challenging. They encourage the person to clarify their feelings, their beliefs, and their understanding about their situation. The question will encourage the person to see what might bring greater wholeness to themselves. So these clearness committees, and they are right out of the 60s, the 1660s in Quaker life, because that's how long they've been doing them, they are based on the premise that each of us has an inner teacher, a voice of truth, that offers the guidance and the power we need to deal with our problems. But that inner voice often gets distorted and diminished by inner and outer interference. So this clearness is all about surrounding the person with a loving and non-harmful space where the focused person is compelled to listen to themselves and what they are really saying, to their own truth, to their own souls. The Clearness Committees, it's a profound group spiritual practice. So what might that look like in a larger community? A larger community of trust beyond small groups like Clearless Committees has no higher agenda than to support its members to discern their own hearts and their souls and their truth in many ways. Imagine having a larger community that supports this kind of authenticity, discernment, compassion, care, and growth. A place where it is your soul that grows in a setting of non-judgment and compassion and presence, but also a place of hopeful expectancy for you, of expectation of you coming from others to whom you are accountable. What kind of place, what kind of community, where could that possibly happen? What would it be like for all of us to create that here based on living our Unitarian Universalist principles, on living our covenant of right relations deeply and profoundly and consciously, a place of love that requires us to treat the wholeness of our souls as an end unto itself rather than a means to get something else? I have seen many glimpses and moments and interaction and movements here, right here, that have those qualities. And I hope you all have. And certainly, one of those moments, and a greatly extended one, is the journey that brought us here to this day of celebration. That happened because we focused our compassion, our love, and our justice. We pushed ourselves and stretched ourselves beyond our fears, fears for ourselves and for this community. We embraced wholeness of purpose, of ourselves as a community, and we grew together to make this day. And that's the kind of space I want to live in always with you, and for you to be in that space always with me and each other, or recommit to it when we falter, which we will. A space of clearness, expectancy, and wholeness where we can be seen as we really are and loved into something more true and more whole. We can do this with intention. I end with these words of Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door in your own mirror. And each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for others, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. My prayer for each of you and all of us together is that we find our own true selves here today and always surrounded by love. Blessed be. Amen.